Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back to another Dr. Supercoach podcast, proudly sponsored by Code Sports. We have just completed round one of the AFL at Supercoach season. And to talk us through the highs, the lows, and plan our future trades, we have Pig. How did you go this week, Pig?
Hey, Pistol. Pretty good, I think. I had a 21-70 in the end. I thought it was looking really good kind of up until that Freo game, and then people that had Fife and Jackson kind of went storming past me a bit, I think.
Sarong too.
And Sarong, of course, yeah. 21.07, which ranks me at 25K. I think it's a solid platform. I don't really think we should worry too much about our ranks this early in the season. Like, once we get a month in, you can probably start worrying about where you're at, but there'll be
Ivory Towers, you know, from my 25K rank. I don't need to worry about it.
Well, no, it's just kind of, there's going to be some freak scores. There's people that will have, like, Captain Jesse Hogan and stuff like that ahead of you that just won't keep up. But seeing as rank doesn't really matter at the moment, how'd you go?
Look, as you said, there'll be some freak scores ahead of you. But for me, that includes every person in the entire game. I'm at 87K.
Oh, no. Okay.
So my 2025 puts me pretty much the bottom of, I think I was bottom except one league in every league I was in from 20. So I feel like that's kind of impressive to be able to pull that off, because that's a lot of different teams. And for mine to be the worst out of all of them is quite fun, I think. I think what's not fun is going to be the best 18s for the next, you know, four whatever weeks, 6 weeks. And you can barely make up ground in best 18 weeks because all the scores are compacted. So I'm going to be sitting out here looking at you and your tower, and I'm just going to be throwing pebbles until around seven where I can try and actually make up some decent ground. So, yeah, it was a real fun first week.
I like how positive you're keeping it. Do you have any specific culprits you want to name in your team?
I didn't have many good scores.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the poor rookie scores, but I also got the combination of Libba into Dawson, into Nick Martin, into Wines, into Hayden Young. Bontempelli was my only midfield ton,
yeah,
which is quite impressive. Last year, Libba and Dawson didn't have 1 week where they both subbed tons. So, in fact, I was looking at the top, I think it was the top 25-ish players by price, and only four of them sub-tons, and I had two of them. So it was just somewhat impressive, the amount of clangers my team managed to collect cumulatively it was something else. It was certainly kept for an exciting weekend.
Yeah, I can imagine. But you also had a few messages in my DMs where you were trying to do a few freaky things, and I was trying to convince you out of them. But not starting Colby McKercher was something that I was trying to really, really persuade you against. Hopefully you can get him back before his price rises.
I might give it a week. That wasn't my best move. My last like four moves I did to my team were tragic, like almost spectacularly poor. I got in Heaney, which was the positive.
Yeah, that's a good.
But the bad part was I removed Flanders and took Miller and McKercher and Sheasel. So I brought in Young, Heaney, Libba, and I don't know, Lyons or something. It was poor. It wasn't great.
I think you even messaged me and said something like, good luck this weekend. Don't make any panic last minute trades. Back yourself. And then you did the opposite.
I thought I was going to start the season with Josh Kelly, and it didn't happen. So I'm proud of myself in that way.
Okay, well, that's good.
Although I would have probably preferred to have him this week, given how the rest of the team performed. So, look, we move on. We move on, and we will discuss what to do when you're in a situation as poor as myself, as well as if you're coming from a position of relative strength, such as yourself, Pig. But before we get to that, I'm going to quickly shout out some of our new patrons this week. A big thank you to Mari Melting, Will Barber, Stefan Yago, Jacob Mahoney, Ollie, Jason Clark, Jordan Fenich, Sam Rawlinson, Nige, Daniel McMurray, and Brad Foote. Thank you very much for signing up to Patreon. Really appreciate it, and hope you enjoy some of that Patreon-only content. Now, Pig, big talking points. Some of our premiums, well, for me, nearly all of my premiums, underperformed, and we need to decide on which ones are just had a down week and can bounce back versus which ones are actual panic signs warning. You know, the big flashing red lights. So take us through some of the backline potential debates.
I think probably the most glaring one for people's backlines might be Hayden Young from a premium perspective.
Yeah.
The fact that he scored 70, he actually did well to salvage a 70 nil in the end. He actually had a really good statistical game for the first three quarters in the midfield, if you don't count disposal efficiency and clangers and turnovers. So he had a really good AFL fantasy score, but he just did all of those things which really hurt you in Supercoach, and I feel like that's really unlike him. Like, he's touted as being a great user of the ball, and I just, up until three-quarter time, I was like, this isn't an issue at all. He'll bounce back pretty easily.
Yeah.
But there are now concerns with three big injuries at Freo, including two in the back line, that in the last quarter he actually had to move back to the back line and kind of shore that up. So there are some flags there. I personally would like to give him one more week and see what JL does this week. But it's not as cut and dry as I thought in terms of holding your keepers for him, I think.
Yeah. So I think my initial thought was, well, we'll see in the team news if, you know, they're going to bring in a key defender or not. And if they bring in a key defender, then maybe Young still remains in the midfield. And then against North Melbourne, it's not a bad team to hold it one more week to reassess. But, you know, if they bring in a forward and it looks like Hayden Young's going to have to play a little bit back, I mean, he doesn't score particularly well as a defender. You know, he's not hitting that 105 that you're kind of hoping for. So I think if I see him named in the back line, or they bring in players that would allude to him playing in a back line role, I would be more on the side of trading than trying to hold him through this. I think, I know 40 trades might be getting to me a little.
No, I agree, because like, we looked at the stats and The gains he paid in the back line last year, so excluding those last five in the midfield, he only averaged 90 in the back line. So you're buying him at his price, hoping he can be a keeper and go 105. And I actually think him playing midfield kind of 105 is like his best case. Not his best case, but it's kind of it's up there of what he can do. So if he's playing backline, I actually don't really want any part of it. So I will wait and see. I am usually inclined to hold my premiums at least till price changes. So I think I personally will give him one more week. But if there's someone you miss that looks incredible, like a Sheasel or whatnot, or a Houston or Dacos, whoever it might be, I would not be against that at all.
So one of the probably worst, biggest underperformer of the entire round was James Sicily, 637K.
Oh, yeah.
He scored 43 points and copped a one-week suspension, which I believe Hawthorne are going to appeal.
Yep.
I do think he probably gets off on that, but did we see enough there? He's in 18% of teams. Is there enough to just immediately jump off?
It probably is. Like last year, there were teams that kind of jumped off Laird after his 50, and he did lose a lot of money. And like it is wasting a trade potentially if you think they're going to be a keeper. But I don't think we've really been that hot on Sicily all preseason. Like since Blunk went down and we thought he was going to have to be accountable, I'm actually surprised he's in that many teams. So yeah, this is a tough one because he could easily be a top six defender, maybe even a top three like last year. But I'm not very confident actually in him at the moment.
So I think we saw in the practice game, he scored like 50 or something. And we were like, he's not. It's just a practice game. And then when you back that up with a 43, there's serious question marks about whether it's worth actually keeping him. I think at that price point, coming, you know, looking at a suspension, even if it's best 18, I think it's just you've paid way too much for Sicily at 637K, where there's too much risk involved there. I think it's panic buttons there. He'd probably be my first player I'd move upon lockout.
Yeah. I didn't even have him on my list to talk about because I didn't realize he was that popular. So I could endorse him becoming less popular.
Was there any other defenders on your list?
A few people were worried about Jaden Short with the score in the 80s. I think he's like, I wasn't too worried about that. If you're a Jaden Short owner, you bought him as kind of probably a 100 guy that you hope can go 105 in the right role. I still think he's got the role. I think he'll be fine. I wouldn't be worried about Jaden.
Neither.
Defenders, in terms of players that did poorly, nope.
That's it?
I guess you could maybe put Zach Williams in the box, but he's more of a mid-pricer, and he's got a buy now anyway. So I'm quite happy to hold Zach Williams. He's had 2.5 or 3 good quarters each game and then kind of just absolutely died in the fourth quarter. You know, kind of maybe that's a fitness thing for not playing for a long time, but I wouldn't be worried about him.
He actually, I mean, I think both games he looks quite good. He gets some kickouts. They use him when they're, you know, trying to bring the ball out of the back line. I guess the first halves of both games, you're like, yeah, this guy's going to be a really good pick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think, what was it, Freco tweeted he'd had 1 point scored last week in the last quarter, and this week it was like -1 point. And I think it was on 47 or 48 at halftime and ended on, you know, 50s. So
yeah,
we can't – it's a shame, but I don't think it's a trade.
I think he'll be fine once he kind of gets more miles under him, and I still think he's going to make us a lot of money if he doesn't get injured.
Probably just a bit of a slow burn.
Yeah.
But I do think he makes us at least – 150, 200K. So
yeah,
it's a hold for me. And lucky it's best 18, I guess.
So if we go on the midfield underperformers, you said you've had two of the big dogs. And I'm talking about Dawson and Libba.
Yeah.
Do you want to chat about them? What do you think about those two?
It's quite funny seeing them. Yeah. So Dawson played, admittedly, this was literally the only game of the round I did not watch because it was on the same time as the Cats game, which was great. But Dawson sometimes has games where he just things don't go his way. I think he had a couple of them last season where his disposal efficiency was a little bit lower and he dropped some marks, and I guess it's a wet game. And I know you've watched this one, just a poor game for Dawson.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch it at the time, but I've gone back and watched the first quarter, in particular, because there's a little nuggety guy I want to talk about later that I'm keen on. But Dawson, he just looked like I think his CBAs and stuff were fine, and he's still kind of...
It's high. It's like 84% or something. Yeah, like
I think he's still the number one kind of guy in that midfield. He just, in the slippery conditions, like his berries and crouches and Lairds weren't necessarily able to hit him with the handball and get it to him. And then when he did, he butchered it. So he was another one like Young. They actually had quite a good, like a reasonable AFL fantasy score. And you can kind of, when players have these poor disposal efficiency games, you can kind of look at the AF score and think, oh, they probably should have been better if they hit their targets. And people like Dawson, you know, they should hit their targets more often than not. So I wouldn't be worried. I'm pretty happy with him. Like in terms of if you owned him, he'll still be a really good pick. But you know, it's frustrating when you pay up and you get a score like that.
I'm not too stressed. I mean, it's 18% owned, which is, I guess, on the lower side of premium midfielders. But, being uniquely Burns is never fun, especially in round one. But I think he comes good over the cross of the season. The biggest thing for me was the CBAs. Well, he had well and truly a team high. He's the number one man for Adelaide. If they're going to make finals, it's pretty much going to be on the back of him and some other players' improvements. I'm pretty content with holding him and watching him again next week.
And Sam Berry actually didn't go in the midfield and do as many CBAs as some of us were probably worried about. He kind of started half forward and then would just sprint to the contest and kind of tag Rao. So that kind of, you know, there were some worries that maybe Sam Berry having a good preseason would make one of the, you know, a bit of a squeeze in the midfield. Didn't happen in this game. I think they still had their main rotation. So that'll be interesting to monitor, I guess. I'm still a little bit worried that they've got so many bodies they want to put through, but not worried for Dawson, I don't think.
No, it's far from a concern. And moving on to the other great man in my team, Libba. He's only 7% owned. Talk about uniquely burnt. A rare sub-time for him. I mean, it was just... What was it? 7 clangers, 30 touches. Some of these times he looked like he received a hospital hand pass and then he would try and kick it and it would just be cut off by Melbourne. They're pretty good at intercepting. So it was just unfortunate. I don't think it's the right game for him. But next week up against the Gold Coast Suns big 4 midfield brigade, I am a little worried about how he's going to go head-to-head with Rao. I mean, amazing matchup to watch, but I am a little bit scared of how he's going to go and see if I get uniquely burnt again. Maybe a slow start for Libba and potentially an early upgrade for those that don't have him.
Yeah, potentially. He also, like they play at Mars Stadium and some weird things happen there, like Caleb Daniels scored a 20, which never happens, but then also there's been some big scores. That's a bit of anything could happen. In terms of Libba as well, I've been noticing a bit of a trend with these teams that it's their first game of the year, so the ones that didn't play round zero. A lot of them, their guns just were very inefficient and rushed and jittery and disposed of it poorly. So I'm talking about like Hayden Young, Jordan Dawson, even Libba, Nick Martin we'll talk about. All these guys haven't played footy yet this year, and it was their first game, and a lot of them had kind of poor disposal efficiency and clangers, and I wonder if that's kind of just first game jitters as well, and if they'll be better next game just because they've had a run kind of thing.
Yeah, that definitely could be something along the lines of that. Otherwise, in the midfield, I think we've got to scroll a fair way down to find the next, I guess, major underperformer. Probably as low as Nick Martin. So I assume you watched your team play. I'll let you take the wheel for this one.
Yeah, like I watched it very closely, and Nick Martin was everywhere in the first half. He looked incredible, except when he kicked it. So he got the ball a lot. Like I actually can't remember what it was. It might have been 20 disposals nearly at halftime or something.
Yeah, it was 18.
And there you go. And like they were feeding him. He was getting it in, and he was just absolutely missing his kicks. And then as the game went on, he just got tired and jittery or something and was dropping marks as well. So he's very much in the Dawson basket of and Young basket of, like, he had a good AFL fantasy score and he played quite well for a lot of it, but just was missing his kicks. his Supercoach score got destroyed because of it. I reckon this is potentially like a big let off the hook for Nick Martin non-owners. I wouldn't be surprised with like a ton next week kind of thing. So there's no way I'm trading him out. I think he's still going to do what we hoped, but he was also just really, really aggressive. Like he was trying to take on these kicks that no one in the world can make, like spearing it between two defenders nearly along the ground. Yeah, maybe not even, but he was just overly ambitious, and I'm hoping Chris Scott has a bit of a chat to him and says, you're an incredible kick, just make the right kick. Yeah, disappointing, and I think non-owners got off the hook, but I'm still well and truly on board, and I think he'll bounce back.
That first half, that 18, that was one of the most incredibly frustrating halves of football to watch. Like, I think he was on 21 points at halftime from 18 possessions. Like, it's so rare for your player to have 18 touches by halftime. But then to basically be on a point per kick or something silly like that, it's absurd. I mean, it was pretty funny. After enough times, I think it was like by possession 10 or 11, I think he like messed up a kick in and you're like, oh no. And then he would just like mark it and then try and like kick across the ground and be intercepted. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like everything was going wrong for Nick Martin in the first half. And I genuinely think it happens early in the third quarter. They just stopped looking for him. Like in the first half, it was such a strong get it to Nick Martin. Our game plan is to get it to Nick Martin. That's why he had 18 touches. They were looking for him. And then after halftime, they're like, let's probably not give it to the guy who's fumbling and turning over every single kick. And they just avoided him. So I don't really blame them, to be honest. I would have done the same thing if I worked really hard and I saw a guy just constantly turn it over. I probably would also not feed him the ball. Let's see if that continues next week. I mean, if they go back to trusting him and it was just a bad game, he could have been on 60 plus at halftime and gone on his way to a really big game. So not an amazing matchup next week, but Redmond is suspended for a week, so it might help Nick Martin's usage out of the back line. So I'm all for giving Nick Martin one more week and then seeing what happens after that.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my most traded out thing on Supercoach, and looks like there's already 5,000 people traded out Nick Martin kind of by Monday. So I'm looking forward to kind of seeing those guys jump off, and I'll just ride the train. I think he's still going to be fine.
Yeah.
I think he's still going to be a really good pick. So I'm not worried at all. And then I guess in the same price range, we could also talk about Ollie Wine. Some people were disappointed with him. Even though he had a 94, it kind of wasn't the role people were promised. Did you watch this one?
I did. And I was a little upset as well. But I'm taking it with a grain of salt because it was West Coast. It wasn't over quickly enough. Port Adelaide probably should have put away West Coast earlier. But he had the right role at the right time and then just got rested forwards and he was out of breath. When you mentioned people that hadn't played a game and they were a bit rusty, I mean, Ollie Wines was the epitome of that. He was huffing and puffing and it was a hot day and he wasn't moving super well. But I think he had under 50% CBA, so he really rested. There were some CBAs I noticed he started in the forward line and that kind of sucks. But let's just see what his role is for Richmond. I mean, it's a tricky line to think that maybe Ollie Wines could get forward status by round 7, but also he'll be scoring poorly in the meantime. So maybe you want to jump off. We'll have to wait and see. If he doesn't get the job done against Richmond and his role is like, you know, 50% CBAs, I think I'd be very, very quick to cut him next week.
Yeah, I think wait and see against Richmond. Last year, Richmond, one of the easiest teams of midfielders to score against, and that potentially even worse this year. So, yeah, wait and see. Hopefully he pigs out a little bit.
No, that's definitely my plan. Did you have another person on your midfield list?
No, well, I had two names. One was just Clary in terms of keep an eye on him for, I guess, the next few rounds. He might drop in price a bit and he might be a nice little pickup kind of after his bye.
Absolutely. His time on ground's been pretty low compared to his usual, and he's still racking up the disposal. He's just using it terribly. So
yeah,
he's going to be a seriously good bargain at some stage.
I also had a few questions about Jai Newcomb.
yes, you
and would. Yeah, which I've talked him up in the preseason. I thought he'd be able to go 105. I probably still think that. I think he's just had a poor game. But he only had one tackle in this game, and this is kind of what I've been talking about in the preseason. Why did he come in the league as a tackling machine and not that big of an accumulator? And now he's switched it, and he's getting around the ground for marks and disposals, but can't lay a tackle. So if I had Jai Newcomb, I'd still hold it for one more game because his price won't change.
Yep.
But he's also that kind of in between pick where you kind of like he's just a bit of a tweener where you kind of need him to go 110 to be a good pick, but you know you could easily see him going 105. But based on last week, he really needs to get his tackles up. If he has another bad game last week, I probably would get off him and go to. Oh, I was going to say Tuke or someone, but they're on their buy. But someone around the same price or even a little bit lower.
Yep.
So, yeah, if Newcomb has another, I'll give him one more chance, but if he has a bad one, just yeet him.
All righty. Jumping into the rucks, I think there's two major talking points. We've got to start with Brody Grundy. I mean, that game that he played. So, firstly, he's got to stop giving away free kicks. It's
it was seven, wasn't it?
It's beyond ridiculous at this point. He had so many last week, and he's backed it up again this week with another seven frees against. I mean, nine clangers for the match. It's a ton. Like, he scored a ton, but he just gave away 30% of his points and free kicks. Like,
it kind of looked like maybe Darcy Cameron, because he'd been his understudy, kind of knew how to play him a bit, but then also a lot of the free kicks I saw were Mason Cox, and it looked like just a height thing. Like, Cox was reaching over him and Grundy just grabbed him around the waist.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I was...
He needs to calm down a bit.
73% of teams. If he puts out a sub-70 score next week, would you consider moving him on?
I won't, because he has West Coast the following week.
It's a good counterpoint.
And I want that matchup. So, no, he doesn't. He has West Coast in round four, sorry. But you and I have talked about this as well, and I kind of mentioned it a bit. He has easily the hardest run of all rucks up to his mid-season bye. So I was, like, Grundy's always been a stepping stone to English for me. I was never planning to keep him. My hope was that he could actually make enough money before round five and English would come down a bit, and that could be when I switch them. So Grundy needs to kind of have a few more good games to make that possible. He's got Goldstein in Sydney this weekend, which Goldstein's kind of middle of the pack in terms of hardness. The SCG is a good ground because there's a lot of stoppages. Then I believe he goes to the MCG and plays Nank, and Nank's actually quite hard of a matchup. And the MCG's not that great of a ground because it's wide and open and less stoppages.
Yep.
So there's two not ideal matchups, but then he does get Bailey Williams and West Coast before his bye. So I'm hoping he can kind of still make a bit of money. I would like him to make 100K. I don't know if that's asking too much, but that's what I'm kind of hoping for. I'm still going to hold him because, like you said, if he didn't give away those free kicks, it's a ton, and we're not really even talking about him.
Yep. I think the issue is twofold. One, we see Tristan Sherry, who's cheaper than him, score 107.
Yep.
So it's something to consider. And as well as if he scores a low ton this week, he'll make 21K, according to Supercoach Gold, which then means you can make 100K by downgrading him to Sherry if you were to do that move. And that 139 falls out of his rolling average, and then your chance of him making his, let's call it English money,
that's
basically zero. So something to consider.
It's a tough one. I also on Tristan Sherry, he played Kieran Briggs, which is one of the easiest ruck matchups in terms of like hit outs. And Sherry himself is actually an incredible, a very, very good hit out ruckman. So not surprised he dominated Briggs. He now goes to Freo and plays
Jackson.
Luke Jackson, who's also a very, very easy matchup. So I actually expect a massive, not massive, but another good Tristan Jerry score this week. And out of all the ruckmen we talked about, Jerry actually has the easiest matchup kind of in terms of his before the bye. So, yeah, maybe he could be a pivot.
That Grundy score in round zero, if Grundy goes on to be a great pick, that's great because now I have him, as you do too. But if it sucks us in to picking him, because I know we were both not super hot on Grundy.
Yeah, you and I were both trying to find Jerry, a way to avoid him.
Oh, man. If that's – that'd be tragic. That round zero would have done some serious damage. But Kieran Briggs was, I guess, very similar to Grundy in that he looked amazing in round one and then quite poor. I know he copped a knock in this game. Is it just too much of a gap to the big boys that it's worth paying 600K for Briggs?
I think he'll be fine. Like, he played, as I said, he played Jerry, who's one of the hardest hit-out matchups, so I didn't expect Briggs to get many hit-outs. But he does usually score a lot more. He's one of those kind of, I guess, in the Max Gorn vein where he just gets his own clearances and contested possessions. And he just didn't really do that in this game, which was kind of where he dropped away. Like, he's not a real get-around-the-ground-and-get-heaps-of-disposals- and marks kind of guy. He's a pick-it-up-off-the-ground-yourself-and-kick-it.
Yeah.
But he plays West Coast this week, so he could easily kind of have a 130, and I would not be shocked at all. So,
no.
Yeah, hold him. I reckon it sucks that he has a bye. That's probably why a lot of people didn't start him. I don't think he goes anywhere near the kind of English, Marshall and Gorn combo, which I think we've all got kind of, well, I've got kind of 118s potentially for plus for all of them. I don't think Briggs is near that. He could be like a 112 maybe still, though. I'm pretty confident.
Alrighty. Well, I'm going to jump into the forward line. We have a big question to answer, and that is, how quickly did you remove Zach Fisher from your team when lockout lifted?
Instantly. yeah. He's one of those guys that I don't think any of us really rate him that highly as a footballer. Might sound harsh, but he's, you know, come to a new team, been playing VFL a bit. He just kind of, he's one of those guys that he can occasionally rack it up, but this one he butchered it. But unlike kind of Young and Dawson and Martin that butchered it, but and I think will be much better kicks, I don't think I can say that about Zach Fisher.
It's quite unfortunate because he had the role and he just...
He did.
Just looked like it was very similar to Martin, as you said, where they just were like, he keeps turning it over. I'm just going to stop giving him the ball. And if I was in a situation where my team wasn't in shambles and, you know, you only had a minor rookie correction trade, I'd probably give Fisher another go. But I do think that he's the easiest way to make any money and fix any issue that you want in your entire team. Like, if you have one problem, just downgrading Fisher gives you the money to fix that problem. And it's pretty hard to say no.
Well, yeah, we were talking about before we came on that you were expecting kind of Sheasel to have the main distributor role, but then Fisher to be second and McKercher to be third. But then I kind of said, no, I was like McKercher is an absolute gun. He's got incredible junior numbers. He's a great kick. I'm not really surprised that they've kind of, at least in this game, put McKercher ahead of Fisher, and I wouldn't be surprised if they keep doing that. Like, I think McKercher is one of their futures, and I don't think Fisher is.
Yep.
I will give him some kudos in that it was a very hard matchup. Like, GWS played a four-tall forward line. With kind of Cadman, Hogan, Brown, and old mate Riccardi. And there were times when all four of them were on the field at the same time, so Fisher actually had to, like, be a key forward and try and stop, like, a Riccardi or
he was on Cadman at one stage. It was a one-on-one marking contest, and Cadman just yoinked it from above his head. I'm like, oh, this is a bit sad.
Yeah, so that is a hard matchup for anyone of his height to try and stop one of them. So it wasn't a good matchup for him defensively, and then they weren't using him running back the other way either. He does play Freo this week at Marvel, who, you know, that should be a nicer ground and a nicer matchup for him. So if someone wanted to hold him, like, I wouldn't be against it. I was thinking about holding him, but because Jack Billings is on the bubble and I want Jack Billings, it's a pretty easy switch for
me. Well, look, I think that is that the last forward on your list as well? Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I think the best thing to do is have a little chat before we get into the mid prices, because I know everyone loves to talk about them as their corrections in round one.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about, I guess, the primos, any line, anyone you want. Who were your, let's say, top three exciting premiums that you wish you could have traded in or will look to trade in or think that they're worth trading in this week?
Well, I'll probably put I might group it into a few categories. I think there's the round three premiums, Gold Coast and GWS, and there's so many in that bunch that are incredible. So the main ones like Tom Green, Tuke Miller, Matt Rowell, Noah Anderson, Sam Flanders, Lockie Whitfield. I'm even going to put Will Powell in that because he's averaging 120 to start the season. And when I went back and watched that Suns game, he is another level. Like, people picked him last year as a breakout. I think they might have gone a year early. Will Powell could easily be a top six defender and I wouldn't be shocked. So all those guys, I personally don't want to trade them in because they've got a bye next week. So, but there are a lot of people keen for it because a lot of these guys are probably going to go up about 30K. So it's really deciding kind of, are you happy to cop a 30K loss, I guess, but not have the points loss on their bye? Or do you just want to get them now while they're cheaper, cover them with a rookie, and then have them for the run home? Yeah, like I said, I've already got Tom Green. I started with Tom Green.
Damn it.
which I'm very happy about. I'm
sure you are.
But so I don't want to take another one on, and I would probably recommend that people just pay the extra 30K in 2 weeks after their buy and then get them with only one buy for the year. But what are your thoughts? I could easily see the argument for buying them cheaper.
Yeah, so when lockout lifted, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to trade Hayden Young to Flanders and then just call it a day. And then I slept on it, and I'm like, ah, it doesn't feel great. I mean, Flanders is projected to go up, I think it's like 26K, but then has a buy, and I'm like, okay, well, if I look at total points, what if I upgraded or, you know, held Young, or what if I traded him to like Sheasel, who doesn't have a buy? And it just makes so much more sense not picking the buy players immediately before their buy. And it sounds so logical when you say it out loud. I mean, I didn't want to start Tom Green because he had two games before the buy. And now I'm going to buy him immediately before the buy. Like,
yeah, you're only getting one.
It just seems like I'm changing my logic and processes purely to fit the narrative of because they look good and I want them in my team. And that doesn't seem like a mathematically sound strategy moving forward. I think you're probably okay if you have one in each line so that you can loophole. But like if you get Flanders, you probably have Sexton. You might have Cadman. And pending Cadman's score this week, none of them are going to be trade outs. So you can't even loophole, rookies onto your field. So kind of get it with like Green because you can loophole between two different rookie options. But all the others kind of leave a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. So I think categorically I'm ruling out everyone from GWS and Gold Coast this week.
Yeah, I am too. So, and it's kind of like our McKercher versus Lyons debate. Wasn't much of a debate because you're very set on it. was that you were saying, oh, I get one game of Lyons before his bye. And I was saying, yeah, but you get, well, I was going to say, you get two of McKercher, which is going to be more than one of Lyons. So it's kind of the same. Like you can have one game of Tom Green now, or you can have two of, I don't know who you'd be trading him from. Like, let's say it's, even if it's Newcomb, you can get two of Newcomb, although Tom Green was much better than two of Newcomb. But let's say it's Libby that you're annoyed with and you want to switch him to Tom Green, and you can get two Libbers instead of one Tom Green. So just buy them after their buy, I think. But for the round five or six premiums, like I'm looking if someone doesn't have a Dacos, a Heaney, or I'll even put my boy Chad Warner in there if someone was keen.
I think that's in a separate category between the you just put Warner in the same category as Heaney and Dacos.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah, look at what he's averaging. He's a primo. Well, if you want to keep it to Heaney and Dacos, but I wanted to shout out the Chad. Do you think it's too late for people to get them? They've got a couple more games before they
No, I think you can still turn it around. Honestly, Dacos looks... What do you call above the next level? I can't really see a world in which...
We need a new tier because we call them primos and then uber primos.
Whatever's above maybe. That. He's like... Coming of Gaz. His scores are just ridiculous. He does so many things that you shouldn't be able to do on the football field. Look, I guess if you didn't start him, it's because of these next couple of games are the ones where you thought he might get tagged. So I guess you might want to stick with that strategy, but that one's up to you. The one that I think is a complete non-negotiable in my mind is Isaac Heaney, because he is, one, averaging 140, and two, looks incredible, and three, has a stupidly easy run coming up. Like, it's like all the bottom teams in a row. We highlighted it last week, but he is getting midfield time, and when he's playing forward against easier teams, he's getting the opportunity to score goals. He is just number one trading target for me, and it's not even close to any other player in the game. Like, so far, Isaac Heaney.
Yeah, so I agree with Dacos. Like, if you didn't start him before, that your reasoning hasn't changed. Like, you're kind of, you're maybe hoping for a bit of attention from Sydney, but you were more kind of, oh, he might get tagged by Finn, then he has a bye, then he might get tagged by Drew. So I guess for Dacos, your reasoning hasn't changed. But Heaney, averaging 140, has a break even and a negative 12. So just based on that, I'm just looking at the super coach. Even if he scores... What are they projecting him to score? A 91. He still goes up 50k in a week, and he's gonna do more than 91. And like you said, he just played the worst team in the league, and now I'll just pause for effect. Do you want
to? Now he plays the next worst team in the league, Essendon.
So yeah, he played Collingwood, who were the bottom of the ladder. Got a 136. Then he plays Essendon. That should be pretty easy for him. Essendon have actually won their two midfield battles the last two games, but they've played Geelong and then Hawthorn, so I don't actually think they're that good.
No.
So, yeah, Essendon, Richmond, West Coast. Gold Coast now might actually be a harder matchup, but he'll still be fine. Hawthorn. Oh, yeah, so that's before his bye. Essendon, Richmond, West Coast before his bye. That's pretty much as easy as you can get unless North are in there too, so that's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's a joke. All in on Heaney.
Yeah, I would be buying Heaney as quickly as I could. If you've got Hayden Young and you've got some DPP or something to get Heaney, I would probably actually just be doing that this week.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't wait to see what Young does.
Look, there's some other cheap midfielders that did very well. Jack Steele scored 119. I'm a little bit wary still, only because Sinclair is going to come back in, and I think with the way their backline operated, I'm not entirely sure Sinclair goes back there immediately. I think he might get a run through the midfield group. So it's a little bit of a wait and see. I think some of the other cheaper, I guess, premiums that scored well, Crouch. But Crouch in the wet. I mean, of course he was going to dominate. Now plays Geelong, which is not a very strong midfield. It's probably going back-to-back good scores. Well done to Crouch owners. I'm not sure I would be keen at this point to immediately rectify into it. I'd probably wait another week and see what happens. I think otherwise from the midfield, some people are looking at trading in Sarong, just given how ridiculously amazing he looked. Is that something you think is reactionary, or do you think it's worth doing?
I'm a bit on the fence here because I had Sarong for a lot of my preseason team.
Yeah.
And then when I did a bit of research, I saw, you know, just maybe a hint of potential regression. So I flipped to Rosie, who I think had upside. And, like, I could be very wrong on Sarong on that. His concern was that he relies solely on inside ball and doesn't get any outside. But he had, like, 25 uncontested possessions and a heap of marks as well as his tackles. So, yeah, if he gets that outside game going as well, he could be incredible and like an easy top eight mid. He was pretty much around the mark last year.
Yeah.
So I think it's just whether you believe that Sarong has added outside game to his game. I think that's what I'm going to boil it down to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's going to go up in price, so if people want to jump on him, you could. But you could still wait a week and see before he moves as well.
He did look absolutely incredible, I'll give you that. It's just the 170 goes out of the rolling average very quickly. I do think we'll get him cheaper at some point. I'm not sure we have to move heaven and earth to grab him, even though it was an incredible performance. If he does it again this week against North Melbourne, which I mean very well might do against North Melbourne, but surely there's some sort of heat that he's now attracted after his performance, and I'd like to see how he goes before bringing him in immediately, just to see how he handles that. So I think if you can wait a week, that would be my play.
Just on him, like last year, I traded Noah Anderson in, and he went a 170. I think that was at like 550k, and then he rocketed up to 650 in a few weeks. But then he put together a few like 105s, and he was back to 550, kind of within another 6 weeks. So just because someone's had that big score, like you said, it goes out of their rolling average quick. They could be at the same price in 8 weeks.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. On the defense side, I think Sheasel looked incredible. It's not a massive surprise. He's in 50% of teams, but just being that main distributor for North Melbourne, it's such a good role. Like, it truly is an incredible role. There's huge upside there. I'm very, very, very strongly considering doing Young to Sheasel and just calling it a day because 550K probably can get back to this price, but I wouldn't be surprised given we saw that consistency of last year where he just put out, it was like 8 or 10 tons in a row, that he might not be affordable during the whole upgrade cycle, in which case it might be best getting him earlier rather than later.
I still think he's a second year player. I think he'll have some fluctuations and be down around this price again. But you also get another week to look at it if you want, because neither Young or Sheasel will move this week.
Absolutely, you can wait and see. But I have so many issues with my team. I need to free up trades for the next week, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I think it would be a fine option. And the reason we're saying, if you can do Young to Heaney now, is because Heaney is on the bubble, like he's moving.
Yeah.
Whereas Sheasel's not moving yet.
That's right.
The other one, like Luke Ryan, was incredible. He did this last year. I think he had a 170 in round one and then followed it up with a few average ones. But he just does this. I think there were some people that were keen on him because Young moving to the midfield might just give him a monopoly back there and it might look like it. But also Freo's defending stocks are a bit shattered at the moment. Does he have to play more accountable, kind of like Sicily? I don't know. I think they still want him being a seagull, but he's an absolutely great purchase, but I wouldn't rush.
It's enough to wait and see how they shift things in that back line. You know, if they shift Hayden Young back now, maybe Luke Ryan loses a little bit of the upside. I don't think so, but let's just wait and see. Good pick for those that selected him. I know there was quite a few that were keen on picking him because he's always a POD and he starts hot.
Yeah, so he is. And there's a lot of these primo defenders that always seem to get themselves to like 550K, like even kind of Stewart and Sicily and Ryan. They're always cheaper at some stage.
Yeah. I mean, there's other I mean, if you wanted to try and get a bit tricky, you know, you could watch Young one more week and then see how he goes and potentially trade him to someone like Nick Newman because he's in 1.4% of teams and will probably be a top 6 to 8 defender, which is always a kind of a fun scenario to be in when you've got a top guy that's in no teams as well. It's a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I'm not as big on Nick Martin. I think he's in not many teams because he's not going to be
Nick Newman
6 to 8. And I don't know why. I just haven't bought into the hype. Maybe it's because I didn't own him last year. But a lot of the projections we did, like when I put out to Twitter and Dr. Supercoach, and 130 people responded saying what they thought people would average. Like the consensus was that he'll go under 100 this year, which was interesting.
That is quite interesting. There's no real reason outside.
No,
of Zach
I think
Williams.
It's just gut feel, which. It's probably not a good enough reason, but anyway.
No, that is a very interesting piece of information. Just one more before you could also go with Will Powell, like you said, after this week, after 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, I'm bigger on Will Powell than Nick Newman, if that means anything. one that I kind of looked at his preseason game, but then went right off and forgot about was Max Holmes. He actually had that halfback roaming role and actually did it really well and hit targets instead of what Nick Martin did.
He did slow down a little bit after halftime. I think he was on like 80 at halftime. So there was a significant slow.
Yep.
So I'd probably give that another watch and see how he performs. Now that teams are aware of it, they might want to also try and shut it down.
Yeah, and St Kilda were the easiest team for defenders to score against last year. So he's, I guess, had his good matchup. Be interesting to see what he can do against Adelaide. I can't remember where they rank for defenders, but I know St Kilda were easy.
Yep.
So I think that's all I kind of had for people that have done well. Did you have anyone else?
Look, there'll be some people that are probably going to be a bit hot on Jeremy Cameron, given how well he started last year, as I can kind of see. But I think with a lot of these guys, you just need to give it another week of data just to be able to see what happens and get a bit more clarity. I think it's usually the best way to play it.
What about Jesse Hogan?
Well, it's a great question. What about Jesse Hogan playing West Coast? He is in 1% of teams and now he has a break even of, what is it, negative 46. So with 100, he makes 71K.
In 1 week.
In 1 week. He probably makes you 120K in the next fortnight. But is it enough to be worth the trade at that price point? I think when you're paying 420K, like I think objectively the money is good that you make, but I think you lose the opportunity cost of investing the money into a 420,000 person. I think it's very different than investing into somebody that we'll talk about later, like Tom Berry, who might make 100K very quickly off you know, worse scores, but you also free up cash going from someone like Zach Fisher rather than having to invest more money into the pick. So I do think whilst the money sounds good on paper, and I mean it is good, and it's the opportunity cost that you lose, I think is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, that's really a good way to... So I guess to summarise that is that he might make you 120K, let's say, quickly, but a rookie might make you 120K as well. But there's a, say, 300 grand difference that you've then still got in your kitty to be able to do other stuff with. So, Hogan will make you money, but a rookie might also make that, whereas you could spend that elsewhere and get points from it. So, probably agree. It'd be a fun pick. And there were a few people that started him last week and have been quite happy with it. So,
I think it's in a similar boat as Mackay. You know, he's going to come off his bubble and then he plays, you know, North Melbourne. And then Fremantle. It's quite a good run, and he probably also makes 100K, but it's really you're investing that 400,000. You know they're not going to be a season-long keeper. And then you have problems trying to guess when to cash out, and that part is also quite a difficult part of the game because it takes one bad score and suddenly they've lost you know, a bunch of the money that you've got them in for, and you make 50K with the trade and it ends up a wasted trade.
Yeah, I guess the plus side is it as well. You get those points on field, like you get 165 points on field, whereas a rookie can't do that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, weigh it up. But I'm more towards let the rookies make your money and let your primos, your keepers, score your points.
Alrighty, so we've got to get into it now. We just mentioned Tom Berry. There's so many different mid prices. There's so many different rookies. So let's just go through the ones on the top of your watch list and any ones you think that you need to move on this week.
Yeah, I'm going to say the first must-have is probably Blake Howes if someone hasn't started with him.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will have started with him because he had that great score in round zero. We got to look at it and we could get him in. But he has a break-even of negative 86. So even with a 44, he's going to go up 60K. I feel like he makes us 150K. Quite quickly, and maybe even a lot more. So here's my number one. If you don't have Blake Howes, I would say absolutely go get him.
Yep.
And for those that have Josh Gibkiss and not Blake Howes for some reason, that's a pretty easy pivot. My number two, it probably actually is Tom Berry. And you and I were talking offline, because we talked about him after the round zero score, and we kind of gave him a bit of stick for laughing about him, that he had a 60 with only six disposals.
Yes.
We're kind of laughing about, oh, that can't be very consistent. That's not going to happen again. And then he came out and tunned up this week. And neither of us actually watched the game live. So we messaged each other and we're like, what the hell happened here? He had a 50-point first quarter that kind of did it. I went back and watched it today. So he plays kind of a high half forward is where he starts, but he actually doesn't play as a forward. He only had two disposals in his own team's forward 50 on the weekend. He had 17 disposals total. There was one in the defending 50. So he had 14 disposals, I guess, between the arcs. So he was starting forward, but then he was sprinting either into the contest or into the opposition defense and getting a lot of his kind of disposals around there. So he's not actually really a true forward, I guess. And we worry about small forwards and their scoring, but he actually gets around the ground. His heat map is pretty heavily defensive half, and over half of his possessions are in the defensive half. So, yeah, he's listed as a forward, but I'm not really calling him a forward. He also does a lot of 1% as pressure acts and tackles that I think actually in Supercoach give him a really high floor. So that's probably where his 60 from six disposals came from. He tackles a lot. Like, he had seven tackles in this game last week. He had 15 pressure acts, which is, when I looked at it, more than Riley Sanders, more than Colby McKercher, more than Caleb Windsor, even more than Harley Reid, who was playing midfield around the ball. So he's one of those kind of grunty, pressure, tackly players, which Supercoach really rewards, and kind of I think that's really good for his floor. So with a 60 and a 100 in his rolling average and now a break even of minus 75, Tom Berry's come into my team and I think he's going to make a lot of money quickly. Even if he scores a 50 and then another 50, he actually makes 100K, even if he goes at 50s in 2 weeks. So I think he can do better than that. Like, I don't think he's going to put out these hundreds much. I think he probably actually is more of a kind of 60 guy. But even, you know, a couple of 60s in a row, he's made you 120K. There's a potential for another spike score just in the way he plays. Like, yeah, on the AFL app, you can click on a player. So I watched the first quarter, which is when he scored heaps, and I was watching him so closely. I don't think anyone's ever watched Tom Berry in a game this closely, apart from maybe his mum.
Yeah.
But then you can go on the AFL app and you can look at their highlights, and the AFL app actually lists every single thing they did in the game and shows you a video of it. So there was 15 minutes of that, and I went and watched that of Tom Berry.
Oh, my God.
So I really deep dived on him. And a lot of his points are like, it'll be a contested possession, so he gets points for picking it up. He had 9 contested possessions to 8 uncontested, which isn't very common for a forward flanker. He also kind of got a lot of points from spoils because he was going back in the back line and spoiling it, or he was kind of doing little 1%ers and kind of shoveling it out to his team. So what I saw, I was really impressed with, and I'm going to purchase him after my deep dive on him. And I think his pressure acts and his 1% as his tackles keep his floor up. And if he can actually get around the ground and have 17 disposals like he did this game, there could be spikes in amongst it as well.
I mean,
I don't think that was what you're expecting.
No, definitely wasn't. I think the part that I'm a little confused about is that, one, he doesn't seem to be like a particularly high disposal getter, even looking through his VFL stats last year.
No.
It was a lot in the teens. And it wasn't really that many other stats. Like, his stats aren't that good, realistically. We're talking in the fantasy points column in the 60s. I mean, all the things point to him not being that good. So it's very contradictory hearing how you're talking about him, because I'm like, maybe he just had a really, really good game. And it's a one-game sample size, and that's what I have to judge. But I do like that the break-even's 104 and he gets an early price rise this week. That is very tempting to me, and he's a kind price, and there's a lot of positives going on there. But
yeah.
But then I consider somebody that's 15K cheaper in Oliver Dempsey, and he scored a 96 first up. And every time I watch Dempsey, I'm like, this kid is really good.
Like, yeah, every time. After that preseason game, you and I said the same thing. We thought, wow.
Oh, and of course, I removed him to free up cash. That was one of those other moves in the last minute to Buku, because I needed the extra 20K. But Dempsey is a really good player. He plays Hawthorn in round 3, North Melbourne in round 5. So he can have games to, I guess, restart his cash gen if he ever puts out a 30. It's hard to pick someone like Barry, who's a bit of an unknown and his stats aren't that good, and compare him to Dempsey, who just looks so good every time I see him. And Dempsey had 103 minutes on ground as well. So he had significant game time.
Yeah.
It's hard not to think Dempsey's going to take it to another level. He's just a very good player. But he doesn't rise in price.
What about the
he doesn't rise in price this week. So that's got to be
considered. That's right. But what if we do the taco emoji and say, why not both?
I mean, you could definitely get Barry this week and Dempsey next week, but people are running out of spots in their forward lines, because at the same time, we've got Billings being resurrected out of absolutely nowhere. And he's essentially being removed from all of our sides because of his sub in round 0. And then all of a sudden, they play him and he has one of the games of his life. He scores 119 Supercoach. I think he had 140-something Dream Team.
Yeah,
but
15 marks or something.
15 marks, and he still played that like high half forward wing sort of role. It's not like a sustainable sort of gig, but he plays Hawthorn this week at the MCG. I mean, it's very possible he goes back-to-back here.
Well, yeah, I'm looking to get Billings in ASAP, as in, like, he's in my team now because of it. He had the role we had in preseason, and I think it's actually the kind of wingy half-forwardy bit we say often isn't good for Supercoach, but when you're kind of the designated kicker kicking to the full forward leading and you can get a lot of score involvements, you can get some boost from that as well. And I actually think that he's really, like, that's what they want him doing, and I wouldn't be surprised at kind of a few more spikes from Billing. So, yeah, I can see what you mean about our forward line getting congested. I guess Lazaro could be someone we could cull. Jai Clark, if we had to. I still think Jai Clark would be a fine pick, by the way. I think he just was very out of his depth and didn't... Well, not out of his depth, but he didn't have a good game.
Well, a disposal per point.
Yeah.
It's Nick Martin.
So 13 disposals, this is not horrible. But what he did with them was, but like if you had to cull him and then kind of move Windsor into the midfield to free up 2 rookie spots, maybe you could do that. Not totally sure yet, but yeah. I'm buying Tom Berry because of my research today, and I think he's got a good floor with his contested and pressure act game, but I also probably will want Dempsey the following week. So I might actually have to plan out how that would work.
I mean, there's a lot of rookies that look quite good. Windsor, before he got subbed, looked like he could have, you know, turned up.
Great.
So he looks like he has some really good scoring potential, and he's going to rise in price this week as well. So I mean, Tom Berry and Windsor, there's only 17K. I guess one is a lot higher pedigree than the other, though.
Yeah. I would probably get Windsor over Tom Berry. I think he's got better job security and better scoring potential.
He's going to make half the amount of money.
Yeah, I just, well, he might be a slower burn. And
will you actually? Yeah. Do you have Windsor? Well,
yeah, I've got Windsor.
Okay.
So I don't have to make that decision.
I mean, next week, if Manor looks very good when he came on, you know, he went at basically the same PPM as someone like Windsor did. If Manor isn't the sub, he could put out a seriously good score as well. And then you've got another guy that's on the bubble. I mean, there's a lot of players here. We haven't even mentioned Fife. These are all forward listed players. There's not that many spots. So this doesn't even take into account people that might want Sharp. If they didn't get him, they might like Carroll, because Carroll looked really good for a second consecutive week, but he's having the bye, so it's not a necessity this week. Let's say Bonner looks incredible for St Kilda. There's a lot of picks, a lot of mid prices, a lot of cheap players, Pig. How are you ordering them? Let's just say everybody has McKercher, because no one would be silly not to pick McKercher. How would you rank, I guess, throwing a blanket? I mean, maybe don't give me all of them, but your top three, actually your top five in order, of the generally we'll call them missed rookies and premiums. Well, how would you decide this? You can throw in D'Ambrosio in there as well.
All right, so my top five, let's have a think.
It's a hard question on the spot, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm probably going to put guys like Massimo and Fife down a little bit because they're not on the bubble yet.
Yep.
And I'd like to see another a view of them. They could be really great picks. I also wouldn't be surprised if someone like Massimo could pot out a 50 next game if the other defenders get it instead. So I guess the missed ones, who are we looking at? Then there's the rookies who have only played one game, like we talked about, Dempsey and Clark. So for me, let's have a look at some break even. So maybe, I think if you don't have Blake Howes, is obviously going to be one, everyone should have him, so I won't include him. Aaron Cadman, Matt Roberts, everyone should have. If you don't, probably go and get them.
Yep.
So I do rate James Jordan quite highly, although I'm not sure if everyone probably has him and we're not going to include that.
You can include him.
Yeah, so I'll probably put James Jordan and Jack Billings at the top in terms of the mid prices.
Yeah, but which one?
I am going to say Jordan.
Okay.
I just think he probably has a more, like, a better floor consistency with, like, his inside game and his tackles. Billings could go up and down a bit with that kind of relying on outside role, but I think they're both great. I'll probably just say Jordan ahead of Billings.
Yeah.
I don't think Billings is going to be a sub again. Like Goodwin did say after that round zero that kind of we wanted to just make him the sub so he can kind of see our system, or he said something like that, and then we'll let him loose. I think they've let him loose now, so I'm happy with that. Sharp, I didn't actually watch that game, but he's been, you know, they got him for a reason. He's going to play wing. Erasmus and Chapman are still there waiting. You know, there's a little bit of insecurity there maybe. Erasmus was sub, I think.
Yeah.
Then came on.
He was. Sharp looked very good, by the way. Like, very, very good. I was a bit not upset picking him, but hesitant, and he was great.
All right, so then who else are we kind of thinking of? I guess if people miss Windsor, I reckon he's one you should go and get. I've talked up Berry. I
was going to say, where are you putting Berry and Windsor and how
I haven't ranked the rookies yet. I'm not yet because I'm trying to work out.
It's mid prices at all.
All right. So let's go James Jordan.
Yep.
Jack Billings.
Okay.
And I'm putting these two ahead just because I think they've got higher scoring potential as well. Like they might make the same amount of money as a rookie, but kind of get you 80s on field.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm then going to go Caleb Windsor. Probably for the job security and the scoring. I then will go Tom Berry because I do think he's going to make us a lot of money. Like, I think he can make us 150K in a month. And then I'll go Sharp just because he's only played one game. But Sharp could probably – and Dempsey. I'll put Dempsey ahead of Sharp just because I've seen Dempsey play and I really like what I saw. But they've just played one game. So they, if they have another 90, for example, they could become kind of must-have. And it might even be after culling someone like Jai Clark, who I'm pretty confident will come good. We did our research and picked him for a reason. But with a 13 in your starting, when someone's got a 90, it's all about quick cash. Is there anyone you think I've missed? Because I don't actually have a list. I'm kind of just winging that.
I mean, it depends if you really want to rule out all of the single game players. I mean, Fife and Bonner would probably be in discussion. For most people, I think this week, they're probably still deciding whether to trade those guys in as well as Mass.
Yeah. If we want to include those guys, I think I'd probably put Fife number one out of the, let's say, the mid prices that have only played one. I think he does have, like, he's got that inside role. He looked like a really good player. I still have concerns about his body and being subbed out. Like, that's just me being conservative. So I'm not going to trade Fife in this week, but I probably do want him if he has another good score. But I just want to see it. So at the moment, I've got the funds. I could go Lazaro to Fife right now, but I actually think I might sit on that and wait a week just to make sure Fife's body gets through, and then I'll do it next week. Bonner and Massimo, I think, are both really good picks, especially if we see another round of them doing what they did this round. Both of them, I got a little bit of questions in terms of, like, Mass was playing wing, but he'd push back to defence and get a lot of the kicks coming out of the 50, but that could be Impey or someone else doing that in the next game. Bonner, there's still question marks with St. Clair, but I actually kind of think St. Clair might play mid and Bonner will be fine. But, yeah, I just have more questions on Bonner because we haven't really – well, we've seen him at Port be able to have some scores at times, but not really consistently. So that's kind of my winging it thought. What about you? Do you have any preferences? Or put it this way, who are you looking to trade in and who's kind of – you might pass on?
I think I've already got Jordan. I do agree his role was really good, so I probably look there just because of that fixture that we spoke about for Heaney. Obviously, Jordan's got the same one, so I think there's quite a lot of upside there. I'm probably leaning towards Billings as my next one. I like that they place Hawthorne. That sub score will go out of his rolling average. If he can put together back-to-back tons, that would be huge. For scoring potential. I think after that, I am tossing up between Dempsey and Berry still. And then maybe Fife after that. Windsor is probably a bit further down my list than yours. I just think the other options are better. Obviously, that's how rankings work. And that's just because I think the combination of... Yeah. I think 180K is getting a little bit steep. And he does have to score quite a bit more than Dempsey to make the same money, and I don't know if he will because his role is still on the wing at the end of the day and he's a first-year player still. So I'm not fully sold on that. I think there's other good mid-prices. Like Tom Powell, we didn't mention, I think he's like 315K and he scored 95 and he looked really good, but North Melbourne's draw is really hard. He's listed as a forward and I don't think I can go there because of the fixtures, but not because of role. The role was awesome. I think there was another sneaky Lockie Bramble, defender midfielder, 292K, scored 107 and took the majority of kick-ins, I think it was, for Bulldogs.
I really rate him like just as a footballer, not even super coach related. I think I picked him up in a fantasy draft because I think he's going to be just a really good player, so... I was, not really surprised seeing that. I don't think that's going to happen
it's
often just because
of
the Bulldogs.
Too much of a weird price.
Yeah, and the Bulldogs have so many distributors coming out of their back line. Like, why are they just targeting him?
Yeah.
But I think he's a really good player. But, probably not for Supercoach.
I mean, Bonner, I just need to see what happens with Sinclair. I'm quite confident that Sinclair goes into the middle. And if that's true, then Bonner could rocket to number one in my rankings next week. But we just need to see how that progresses. I'm still deciding my trades. I think Billings coming in is my number one option. Honestly, could go anywhere with the other two trades if I boost. I don't even know if I'm going to boost. We'll figure out as we go. But
I guess the one of the takeaways from last year is that, like, you don't have to have every rookie that pops off. You want to get like as many of them as you can, but you might miss one or two, and maybe that's just because there's only eight forward slots. You might have to miss one or two. But
talking like somebody who didn't miss all the rookies last season, I see.
I'm sure I missed a few, and I traded like. And one of the reasons I'm not wanting to trade a Dempsey or someone in this week is because I did get burnt by like a Blake Drury last year, trading him in after one game, and then he never played again. So that's kind of why I've ranked like the wins as higher than the Dempseys and the Sharps, but that could probably change in a week.
Yeah, so it looks like you've learnt your lesson, which is something I'm incapable of doing. So I appreciate you being on here with me. To talk some sound super coach advice, Pig. Did you have any, I guess, final words of wisdom?
My last question was just around boosting or not. If you are pretty confident that you're going to do two trades this week, do you think, and then you can predict already one that's going to happen next week, like let's say it's getting Jack Carroll in, do you think you should just boost and do that now so that it's done, and then in case there's a heap of carnage next week, then you've got three if you need it?
I really think next week most people will use three just because of they're trying to optimize their team. So I think that's pretty much locked in. Look, the boost, it might hamper your upgrade cadence if you run out of boosts. I know for me, I ran out of boosts really early last season, and it did hurt when I copped an injury and everyone was upgrading that week.
Yeah, and you only had two.
And I only had two, so I had to trade out the injured player, and I kept being one step behind. I couldn't get Sicily at his lowest price, and then I couldn't get there was someone else that was at their lowest price, and I just like kept missing by a week because I'd run out of boosts on injured players. So they did provide quite a lot of value. So I prefer not to boost. I'm really trying to only use two trades this week, knowing I'm likely to use three next week. But at the end of the day, I think it's all very much team dependent and how you went. I think it's really just like how you went in the first week, how your team's looking, and if you have like obvious holes to fix up. I mean, a lot of us have Gipkus, who has to be traded. I don't think Zach Reed needs to be traded because he's probably going to come back. We'll wait and see on that one. And Jai Clark, you probably can give another week as well. I think realistically, Gipkus is the only player that forces your hand unless you also had Sicily. But everyone else, technically, you can wait on. So I think I would do my best to just use two if you can. If your team's in a bad state, just use three and get it. You know, the difference between having three boosts during the upgrade season and four boosts is one injury trade, and pray you get lucky.
Yeah, I agree about kind of holding Reed. Because I think we picked him for a reason. He'll come back in the best 22. I still think he can be a good scorer when he's healthy and playing. So I think he'll still make a fair bit of cash for us. It might just be a bit delayed in terms of everyone else, but sometimes it's good to be having cash coming in towards the end there.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find us on all of the classic platforms where you listen to podcasts. You can find Pig on Twitter at pig_DRSC. You can find myself at pistol_DRSC, JB at JB_DRSC, and Chizo at Chizo_DRSC. Specifically, JB had a very good opening round. I think it was a 2-2-5-5 or something like that. So you might want to get around him on Twitter and check out his team. He's doing a lot of YouTube content at the moment, so definitely check out the Dr. Supercoach YouTube if you want to hear some snippets of advice from JB, who started particularly well. Otherwise, Pig and I will catch you next week.